I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome back. It's so great to have you with us today.
Hello, glad to be back, especially on the topic.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited for this one because I know it's one that you're pretty up on and one I think folks will really enjoy. So today, Roger, you had a sneak peek, but I'd like to talk about quantum computing. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe we can start off with an overview and kind of think of our conversation as quantum computing 101. But then I know you have a lot of cool examples based on what you know, so feel free to share. But to start, for anyone unfamiliar, what is quantum computing? And what are some of the opportunities?
Okay, well, so quantum computers are a new type of computer that use quantum properties and quantum particles. And let me say, the entire universe, everything that we know behaves using quantum. There isn't like a quantum world, not a quantum world. Everything you can see, touch, feel, the stars, the planets, the table, rocks, they all work on quantum and quantum mechanics. So quantum computers are named after that quantum mechanics, but it is kind of, it's been something we've known about for over 100 years, and there's been thousands and thousands of experiments, and it's among the most proven science that there could possibly be. So years ago, we were wondering if it was really true, but now we really, really know with an incredible degree of accuracy that it exists. But the reason why you'll hear, if anyone starts talking about quantum, sometimes your head starts to hurt because it literally just says some weird things that is different than what we can actually see and feel and the way that we think things operate. Like one of the great examples is that, you know, in the quantum world, every possible answer is the answer. Like if, you know, if let's say a dog's running by, you know, in our world, what we call the classical world, that dog, if we're gonna say, is that dog white or black? And let's suppose that the dog could be, you know, white or black. In the quantum world, that dog would be both white and black and every possible combination in between at all the times. And it wouldn't be like that dog's white or black. It is white, it is black, and it is every possible combination in between. And even weirder, something called entanglement. Let's suppose that those dogs were two quantum particles. And quantum particles are things like electrons, or neutrinos, if you've heard of those, some very small basic particles that make up everything. But let's say electrons or photons like light. Imagine that those two, that we had two dogs, and these two dogs sniffed each other and got what we called entangled. For the rest of their lives, those two dogs, whatever one of them did, the other one would also do at the same time, nearly instantaneous, even if they were a universe apart. So it's like this really strange kind of sciencey thing. It happens that the way that where we see it is at these very small subatomic levels, you know, smaller than the size of atoms. But when we see those particles, they behave in very particular. And we say it's strange. You hear people talk, oh, quantum's so strange, so weird. It's just because we're kind of learning about it and it seems to be different. But what's interesting is that these strange properties, like, hey, that dog can be both white and black at the same time. And if two dogs touch, they stay entangled for the rest of their lives, that sort of stuff. Those are the things that when you make a quantum computer, and we made the first quantum computer back in 1999, and now we literally have hundreds of them today, although they're very rudimentary, very early, but they're using those peculiar properties of quantum particles to make computers that are capable of doing things that we never could accomplish before. I mean, that's the big thing, is that we're essentially making these computers that are very powerful, are capable of doing things that we couldn't do before, like, and even just storage wise, like if you get a quantum bit, like computers work in bits and quantum computers work in something called a qubit or quantum bit. If you get like, you can fit every bit of information that has ever been invented, you know, that we know about, Library of Congress, plus every single thing in the world, in the universe, on a quantum computer with like 70 qubits.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, so very powerful. And they can, the biggest thing why they're always talked about is that one of the quantum computers are going to make some really incredible inventions. I think quantum computers in the next couple of dozen years are going to make services and inventions that are as astounding as the internet and everything the internet has brought us. Might as well be quantum is like inventing the light for the first time, or electricity, or the internet. Like, quantum is just going to bring out this new paradigm shift that changes everything. And it's coming soon. But besides all of these new advances we're going to make, incredible things and incredible computations, it also is capable of breaking probably 90% of the encryption that we use today.
Okay.
And that's the big threat.
Okay. I was going to ask you about the threat. So that's that, and like the implications for cybersecurity. So it sounds like encryption is a big one.
Yeah. Although it's only certain types of encryption, but they're pretty substantial. First of all, any traditional, what's called public key asymmetric cryptography, where you have like this public key and a private key, you know, the private key you keep secret and the public key you can give to anybody, and what one encrypts, the other can decrypt. That traditional public key cryptography works by using mathematical problems. Usually large prime numbers are involved, but they create these problems that are so difficult that even if you see the result, you and every computer you could ever put together, you could take every computer in the world ever made and be given millions of years, and you couldn't figure out how to factor, they call it, that math problem. That's how most of today's asymmetric encryption works, and almost all of it that we rely upon, RSA, Diffie-Hellman, elliptical curve cryptography, that probably covers the vast majority of use. And it's the way Wi-Fi works. It's the way TLS works. So most of the internet, 90% of the internet works on TLS, HTTPS. It works that way. Your banking transactions are protected that way, you know, all sorts of things. Well, when quantum computers get sufficiently capable, which could actually have already occurred possibly, or I think most people think it's going to happen in the next 10 years or so. A lot of people think it could happen in the next 5 years or so. Well, all that, anything that's protected by that traditional asymmetric encryption, again, RSA, Diffie-Hellman, elliptical curve cryptography, will be readable. And all the symmetric encryption, that's encryption that uses the same key to encrypt as to decrypt, so advanced AES, advanced encryption standard, the protective strength of any key with that is immediately cut in half. And so that's really this big fear, is that once a nation, once somebody has a sufficiently capable quantum computer, and again, there's a small chance that it could have already been done and we just don't know about it by some nation state, that all the encryption, which is like 90% of the world uses, will be broken and the information it's protecting readable. And there's a chance that there's organizations, well, not even a chance, it's a guarantee, that some nation states are spying on other people's stuff, waiting for the day when they have sufficiently capable quantum computers, because it's encrypted, but they know that in a couple of years, 10 years, they'll be able to read it. So they're actually sniffing people's networks today that's encrypted with today's encryption, knowing that, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, they're going to be able to read what that says.
Interesting. And when quantum computing takes off, and however amount of, you know, however long that period of time will be before or what have you, will we have to migrate to quantum computing, or how does the adoption process work, if you know yet? And if, are there any vectors or industries better suited than others?
Yeah, so right now, actually, every organization should be preparing for this. It is it's like a Y2K. It's coming, except for we don't know when it's going to happen, but there is very, very likely, you know, within the next 10 years or so, if not sooner, that we're going to see these sufficiently capable quantum computers. And because of that, every organization right now should be creating a quantum plan, preparation plan. And step one is that you do an inventory, a data protection inventory, of how of all the different cryptography that's in your company. So you look at all the information that you need to protect, that's critical, that you need to protect longer than a couple of years, let's say, figure out what encryption's around it, figure out based upon what you find that you have in your company, what needs to be replaced. And really what's, you know, so you should make sure your symmetric key sizes are 192-bit or bigger, really 256-bit. So if you have AES, 128 bit, let's say, make sure you move it to 192 bits or longer. If you have asymmetric cryptography, which we all do, you're going to, in the next couple of years, have to move to what's called post-quantum cryptography. So NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has been having this multi-year post-quantum cryptography contest to figure out what encryption algorithms and what digital signature algorithms are going to replace today's standards of, you know, RSA, Diffie-Hellman, and ECC. And it's actually been the contest has been going on for many, many years, and we're down to the finalists, round three finalists. And hopefully it's thought by 2022 to 2024, NIST is going to select one or more finalists for to replace our asymmetric standards and our digital signature standards. And when that gets announced, everybody's going to have to, as fast as they can, move to the new post-quantum standards. So you should be, number one, taking an inventory today of what your encryption is so you know how big the problem is and what you're going to have to move. And remember, RSA, Diffie-Hellman, ECC stuff's going to have to be moved. Any symmetric key sizes smaller than 192 need to be increased and made larger. So everybody should be doing this data protection inventory to prepare for it. And let me say that I'm working as part of the Cloud Security Alliance's Quantum Safe Security Working Group. We're getting ready to release a white paper that I'm one of the main authors of that tells everybody step by step, this is what you need to do. But if I could communicate to everyone, you need to be looking at this now. It is a coming Y2K problem that if you don't address, you're going to be in a panic. You know, the sooner it gets. And if you start preparing now and educating people about it coming, you'll be able to move more logically, smoothly. It will be less panic, less cost at the end. And so it's coming. And really, the biggest thing I say to people is be aware that the quantum, the post-quantum migration is coming. And there are things you need to be doing today to prepare for it.
Wow, that's great. And that does sound like it's very imminent. It's much more imminent than even I thought based on what I was looking at before having this conversation. So I'm glad that you were able to share that with our listeners so that they can begin preparing.
Yeah. And, you know, I've given a talk on this, the coming quantum threat and the need to do it probably to 100 different places.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, the U.S. government said a couple of years ago, everybody should start preparing now. NIST said it. And the U.S. government said it, and the National Sciences Foundation said it in 2017, hey, everybody should start preparing now. And without a doubt, across the hundreds of groups that I've presented it to, nobody's doing anything. The vast majority of the people, maybe out of 100 groups with thousands of people overall I've talked to, maybe, you know, 1% even know it's a thing they need to be worried about.
Right. Yeah. Oof. That's it's funny how that works, how until it's kind of in our face, we don't really want to think about it. It's kind of overwhelming, you know, like I bet that that's probably a large part of it. And working from home, everyone had to speed up their digital transformations and their cloud transformation. Like that was a lot. So the idea of this and it's not here yet. Like, why do I have to worry about that?
Yeah, you know, it very true. There's more. You need to worry about social engineering and unpatched software more, right? Because those are how you are being successfully attacked today. You need to make sure you have good password and strong password policies and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, like with Y2K coming, Y2K, a lot of people say the year 2000 problem, they're like, oh, that really wasn't a big deal. Well, it wasn't because the world got together and figured out years ahead of time, we need to start looking for all these particular occurrences where we're only using two-digit dates versus four-digit dates. And everybody started inventorying the software and their hardware and replacing stuff and upgrading stuff. So by the time Y2K came, we actually had it fairly handled. And it was kind of a non-event, right? But a lot of people remember it as a non-event, like, we got worried about nothing. No, it's only because we took years to prepare. And that we successfully thwarted what were going to be the biggest problems ahead of time, thankfully, so that when it did occur, it wasn't that big of a deal. And what broke when it did, people were expecting and could fix it. Why this quantum thing is kind of the same thing, except for almost no one's preparing.
Right.
If I tell you, go find out what cryptography is in your company, if you're a company of any size, you're already talking about probably a multi-year project just to discover what you have in your company, much less remediate it.
Interesting. That's an interesting point. So Roger, what are some examples of quantum computing in real life now that you find fascinating? Anything you could share?
Yeah, well, I mean, so quantum computers are kind of early and new, but we actually have lots of quantum devices out there already and have since like the 2000s. Like we've had what's called quantum key distribution devices, and they actually use the properties of quantum computers to protect other encryption keys that are transmitted across the network. So we actually have quantum protected networks and have had for a long, long time. There's, you know, quantum-based satellite transmissions that China is doing. There's been some, and even what's called quantum random number generators. The only true random number generators really are quantum random number generators. And there's actually a bunch of them out there today. You can even buy one on a Raspberry Pi. There's, I think that pretty soon, most of the random number generators that are used in encryption and to secure our computers are probably going to be quantum related. Just because they're, again, there's already many, many of them. You can buy them for Raspberry Pis, which is pretty cool. I played with one. And you have your quantum key distribution machines. And, what I think is just overall interesting about it is that I think it's very likely that in, you know, 2 decades or so, we're going to have quantum computers on every desktop or something like that. Some people don't think so, but there's actually a lot of research being done of how to fit quantum computers on a silicone chip. Wow. And there is constant, steady progress there. So right now, all the quantum computers are usually these big computers and super cooled, climate-controlled rooms and things like that. But there's a lot of scientists and research places, especially in Australia and in China, where they're doing what's called photonics. But they're actually learning how to do these photonics on silicone chips so that they don't have, you know. So you got to love it. It's like we have quantum computers are kind of like regular computers used to be, where right. It took up a whole room or yeah. a building. And I think one day there's a good chance we'll have it on our wristwatch.
Yeah, exactly. I guess if we spoke to someone, you know, 30 years ago about that or what have you, they probably wouldn't have thought that we had wearable tech like we do today. But here we are. So that definitely makes sense that we could all have a quantum computer on our desk maybe sometime in the future. Very cool.
Yeah, although what's interesting today is the average quantum computer we have today, there's only a couple hundred of them, mm-hmm. don't have the power of your wristwatch yet.
Oh, really? Okay.
But that is likely to change. We keep making steady progress, and there will become this time where they're so powerful that if you don't have a quantum computer, you're going to be at a distinct disadvantage as a country and also as a company.
Interesting. That is very fast. It does. It's kind of hard to wrap my brain around, but it's very cool. It's very interesting. And I'm excited to keep learning more about it. And I'm going to maybe do a Google alert on that or something. I saw something about how, I think Elon Musk has a company called Neuralink, and they claim that they're on the cusp of a quantum computer that could be connected to the human brain. So that's just like super wild to me. I can't even comprehend that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Some people say, well, I wonder if we're going to be able to make very stable quantum computers like today's computers that work anywhere, like on your desk or whatever. I'm like, yes. Like, how do you know? I was like, our brains only work because of quantum mechanics. And yeah. that is the wettest, weirdest place you could ever put a computer. So, you know, will we be able to do it? Yes. Nature's already done it. We'll eventually be able to do it.
That's a really great point. Well, Roger, thank you so much for joining me today. This is another super fun conversation, and it's one that I hope that we can keep going in the future on the series as well. We'll have to come back and if there are any significant advancements, which I'm sure there will be. But
well, thank you so much. I love the topic. I'm very passionate about it. It is one of my hobbies, and it's because it has fascinated me for decades. And let me say, we are literally all of us, you, me, and the audience. We're literally sitting on the cusp of where quantum computers are going to make a paradigm shift in the rest of our lives. And we're literally touching that line, and it's getting ready to happen. Just like Elon Musk's EV vehicles have brought along electric vehicles, just like all kinds of stuff. the quantum thing that's getting ready to happen that we've been thinking was going to happen for decades is truly very close. And we're all going to be alive and be a part of that paradigm shift as it happens. I'm so excited about it.
I am too. That's very exciting. Roger, thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. And you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.